Yo, what's up? It's your boy Chico Benjamin. That's right, yes, the actor, the singer first and foremost, and I'm out here in La La Land in this big interview with my man Kai on View from the Stoop. If you didn't know, you better ask somebody. Peace.
Welcome back, family. This week we have another amazing guest that we know you're going to enjoy. Jermaine Rivers has had the kind of longevity that actors dream of. You might have seen him on Devious Maids, The Gifted, or in Den of Thieves with 50 Cent. In addition to being some of the biggest shows and movies of the last half decade, Jermaine is also a published author of an exciting, action-packed, multi-part series of novels. He stopped by the Stoop to talk with us about his career and the path that he's taken to live out his dreams. You'll love the advice he gives for those trying to become working actors in their own right, and we're sure that you'll be able to take something positive away from our conversation. When you're done, leave us a comment and let us know what you think. Then check out the Brownstone Media Group Top 10 Plus 2 on Spotify and follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And also, check out the website at www.viewfromthestoop.com. You're going to love this one, family. So let's go. To everybody out there who may not know, please introduce yourself. Tell everybody who you are and how you got to where you are.
My name is Jermaine Rivers. I'm an actor based out of Atlanta. I'm currently on a show called The Gifted on Fox. I play a mutant named Shatter. A couple other shows I'm on, the MacGyver, playing Frank Coton, rebooted from the original show, reprised the role of Cleavon Little. And you'll also see me on the 20th on Tyler Perry, The Have and Have Nots, as Officer Holmes. But yeah, it's been a journey that's taken probably the better part of a decade to get to where I'm at right now. Just hard work, dedication, and the rest is history. So let's get started, Kai.
So let's back up. Let's start at the beginning, or as close to the beginning. Were you born knowing from like the start you wanted to entertain, or was there another path in place? When did you find this gift of yours?
In terms of acting, I never really wanted or had aspirations to be an actor. It's one of those things where it just kind of happened. Right place at the right time with the right skill sets. Now, prior to becoming an actor and amassing the credits that I have, you know, I have a background in writing. I'm a published author. And so the storytelling aspect has always been there. The character development, bringing something to life from the abstract has always been there. So I guess I can say I can reconcile everything that's happened based off of my love for literature, for books, and for storytelling. And also just being a fan of film and TV. You know, I like great performances. So yeah, it's a combination of a lot of things that got me here. I just can't say it's one singular thing, like coming from a theatrical background or a family that's deep in theatrical background. That wasn't the case with me. So I'm kind of like an anomaly in that sense.
So I want to get to the acting, but you said that you were a published author. And I know there's a lot of people right out there who, in any walk of life, have an idea that they want to birth into a reality. And there's a starting point that happens. Being a published author is not an easy thing. So I don't want anybody out there to think that, oh, I can just, you know, anybody can just do it. How did you kind of nurture that talent before you even became an actor? How did you nurture your creativity?
It's always been an outlet, a place where I can go to express myself, whether it be poetry. But in this case, it was actually a premise or a series of books that I was writing. The first book that got published back in 2006 called The Nemesis Chronicles. And it was a planned four-book series, three of which have already been published and disseminated and, you know, still kind of like out there, like on media outlets, Amazon, Books A Million, things like that. But, you know, as an individual with a penchant for writing and storytelling, it happened. You know, that was my way of expressing myself, telling my stories based off of what I see in the world and making a contribution to literature in itself.
So this is something that you were educated in, or is it something you just picked up naturally?
Something I picked up, both.
Okay.
Both. You know, because if you're gonna do it at that level, of course you're gonna have to have some kind of form of training.
Okay.
You know, through college and things, but it was something that came easier for me.
Mm-hmm.
It came easier, like writing, having a vivid imagination. It came easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't so much of a burden. Like I would write papers. It'd be 8, 9, 10 page papers, whereas the only requirement is like, you know, like a 6-page paper.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always had like the ability to convey my thoughts onto paper, and then just kind of go through the whole, you know, the format of creative writing. So it's just one of those things that just came naturally for me.
At what point did you decide to move on from acting? Well, actually, you know what? Let's go back. What are the books about? Because it sounds fascinating that you've got a multi-arc story out there.
Right. The books, The Nemesis Chronicles, basically is a story about spiritual warfare.
Okay.
But in a more contemporary sense, where my primary character is an avenging angel who, at the gates of heaven, swore an oath right after Lucifer's fall from grace, to never return to heaven until all evil on earth was eradicated. Because during the great battle in the book of Revelation, it talks about how Lucifer warred against God and he took a third of heaven with him. So that's the route that I took writing this book initially. But it's more of the why I wrote the book than the how.
Mm-hmm.
Why I wrote the book on that premise. In 2002, I was still in the military, in the Army, and we had just deployed to Iraq for the initial surge. And during my time there, I spent a year in Iraq during that first invasion. And I just saw a whole bunch of stuff that I had to kind of get off my chest. You know, so much evil in the world and so many conflicts going on. So that's what really prompted me to write on that genre, because I'm right there in Iraq, passing through Babylon. There's so much energy there, and it just, you know, it compelled me to write. So I said, for this particular conflict, let me go back to the beginning to understand why we have so much conflict in the world on a spiritual level. And that was the motivation for me to write Nemesis, the Nemesis Chronicles, where I wrote from the perspective of a spiritual being who was witnessed firsthand the arguments that was made in heaven, the war, how it ended up on earth, being fought on the earth plane. And then it jumps into modern day time after millennia has passed, where this angel was going around basically eradicating these fallen or the demons, and runs across some human characters and human elements that got involved in this storyline. And through the books, it tells a story, and it goes all the way into the third book, which is Road to Armageddon, which is kind of like... It's almost like the most climatic part of the book series.
Mm-hmm.
So don't want to jump too far into it, but that was my journey as an author.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that was a story that I had to tell, that I could only tell from my point of view,
mm-hmm.
based off of my meditations. And it went well. I got a lot of great reviews.
So from being an author, when did you first catch the acting bug?
In 2011.
Okay.
I was in Savannah, Georgia. And they were filming CBGB in Savannah. And I actually, you know, ran into the set and just saw the process. And I was like, hey, you know, it's interesting. You know, although I did a little theater in high school, not so much to say that, you know, I wanted to be, you know, in the theater, in the contemporary theater, but that intrigued me just to see the whole cinematic process. And, I was approached by a young lady who said, hey, look, you know, you got a great look. What do you do? And we had a conversation, and one thing led to the next. And within 30 days from that initial meeting, I ended up being signed to an agency. It's just a stream of, I won't call it good luck. I would just call it being at the right place at the right time with the right skill sets that was already there. The only thing I had to do was just apply myself, get some really good acting coaches, and fine tune my craft and to build a working knowledge of acting
mm-hmm.
as a craft, you know? So, It was just a culmination of a lot of minor events that happened in a relatively short time. And I had the courage to just take a leap, you know, out of what I felt was something that I knew I was familiar with on a day-to-day basis and say, you know what? I wouldn't have been led here if I wasn't able to do it. So I made it happen.
Now, I love the fact that you said after you got signed, you started taking classes and honing your craft. Can you speak a little bit about how the preparation leads to the success that has come since?
Absolutely. You can't take any days off, especially when you have that kind of a learning curve. You know, nobody can just wake up and step on a movie set and expect to be proficient. It's not going to happen, especially if you don't have that background, if you haven't been around movie sets. So you have to grind it out from the bottom. You have to do a lot of research, have to do a lot of study. You have to, you know, go to some movie sets, you know, get a little extra time in. Early in my career, I did a couple of extra jobs just so that way I could learn the set, the inner workings of the set. But I didn't live there. You know, some people, they want to be an actor. They want to pursue acting as a career, but they're slants. Or they'll do a lot of background work and extra work. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you want to aspire for something bigger than just that, and you really want to get into this thing that I have come to love, then you have to be a student to the process. You have to constantly educate yourself. You got to constantly look for sources to learn and grow and develop your skill set. And that means investing in yourself. It's been a lot of times where early in my process, in my journey, I would spend weekends going through books, weekends setting up a space in my house to, you know, have a camera up, my background, purchasing lights and putting myself in that element to where I'm doing monologues, I'm reviewing the tapes, I'm looking at myself, I'm trying to figure out, you know, eye lines and breathing, everything. It's just a culmination of skill sets that you really have to work on. And also surrounding yourself with people who are better than you, right? Surrounding yourself with people who are better than you, who've been doing it long enough. That way you can have kind of a mentor or someone that can help you work through that process. But it takes hard work and it never ends. I'm right now, I'm going over a script right now, right before you called me. Mm-hmm. It never ends. And I that's the one thing I love about it.
Do you ever have those moments where it just feels like everything is fit together and everything you've all the work you've put in is now paying off in the scene that you're doing?
I can sit back and appreciate the strides that I have made.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I still have far to go. I never get comfortable and complacent and sit back and be like, oh, I could take a breath. I can enjoy it. I can smell the roses along the journey.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something I know for me to attain a level that I feel that is attainable. There's a lot more hours I got to put in. And I think I said a couple of days ago in an interview that I did where the mastery, true mastery in an art form, is 20,000 hours, I think, that you have to really put in to become truly proficient in your craft, whether it be basketball or football or golf, something that takes concentration and you know, you got to put in those hours. So I'm still tracking, you know, I got a lot more hours to put in before I can feel like I can really take a breath. But I can see, you know, Jermaine now opposed to Jermaine in 2011, leaps and bounds. It's been a quantum leap.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because the work ethic. And being true to myself, knowing that I don't know or I didn't know everything I should at that time. So I got to work. I got to be competitive to so that way I can go in and I can book those gigs. And I think I've done a good job at that.
Where does the work ethic come from? Was it from the military? Was that something that you had innately? Because you come at your craft with such intensity.
Right. I think it's something I have innately.
Okay.
And the reason being is because, I don't know, just by nature, I'm a Virgo, man. I am a Virgo. I'm a true Virgo. We're not going to approach anything haphazardly, mm-hmm. marginally, and not just for the sake of vanity, but it's just for the sake of saying, hey, look, God, he doesn't create anything on a mediocre scale. Everything that he creates is amazing. And if he created me in his image, then I have the potential to do amazing things. So with that, whatever gifts he's given me, it would be a slap in the face for me not to try to do my level best to hone whatever those skill sets are. That way, if I can motivate somebody or I can inspire somebody the way I was inspired, then hey, that is the goal that I want to attain. Not for the sake of vanity, but when you find something that you truly love, then you're gonna put every ounce of energy that you have behind it. And that's where the work ethic comes in. To do those things that most people say, you know, I'm gonna just put that off for later. No, I can't do that. I wanna do it now. And I wanna keep doing it until I feel like, okay, I'm ready.
Mm-hmm. What was your first break? The first moment you felt like I'm on a set and I'm doing my thing?
2012, I did a film with Danny Glover, mm-hmm. Richard Dreyfuss, and Danny Masterson called Killing Winston Jones. And I was on that film for like 3 weeks. It was a fast shoot. We was filming for almost like 2 months, 2.5 months, something like that. But that was when I say, everything that I had done up to that point in less than a year, it really kind of paid off. It really started to show and pay dividends because I was there. Mm-hmm. They chose me, and I didn't take that lightly. And at the same token, I was watching Danny Glover and Richard Dreyfuss. That's all I got to say. You know, two
right.
two award-winning actors who's been in the game a long time. And
legends.
I actually, you know, had great rapport with Danny, Mr. Glover. Yeah, and he was just that amazing. Just, you know, forthcoming with advice, insight. And just to see how he navigated and how he dealt with people and dealt with the fans, because we were filming in a residential area in Savannah. Mm. And he would make it a point from the base camp where we was, you know, basically holding up in our trailers to where we were filming in someone's house was like a couple of blocks down the road. He would make a point to dismount from the golf cart. Right, because the PAs would drive us out to the set. He would dismount every morning about an hour, maybe 2 hours before he would have to be on set, just to greet the people that came out that knew he was in the area. So that was my inception in terms of the kind of celebrity or how you should do business, mm-hmm. you know, just being kind and generous. So that was probably the best inception or integration within the craft of acting, because if you got Danny Glover that's taking it upon himself to do that, then there's no reason for me to come and try to be or develop an attitude or people around me to have those kind of attitudes. Right. So
over the last few years, you have been attached to some of the bigger projects on television and in upcoming movies. And I just want to kind of go through a few of them, because the names that you've done, the shows that you've been on, are not small projects, and I think it's important to highlight that.
Right.
Let's start with Tyler Perry stuff, okay? You've done a few of the different shows. Is that just the benefit of being in Atlanta, or that was something that you pursued?
It wasn't the benefit of being in Atlanta, because when I booked those shows, I was living in Savannah.
Okay.
But that came from 2 or 3 years of grinding and building a relationship with the casting directors and building their trust.
Mm-hmm.
Raven Drummer, who cast predominantly for Tyler Perry. I remember when I first got signed to my agency, and maybe a year after that, that's when I started seeing, you know, requests to audition for their shows. And I think I auditioned for Tyler Perry maybe about half a dozen times before I got my first call back.
Okay.
Right before I even got my first call back. And then probably about 2 years after I really, really figured out what I was doing and how I should be doing it, was I fortunate enough to land my first gig with him on If Loving You Was Wrong. And I think that was in 2014, I believe, mm-hmm. maybe 15, 2014, 15. So it's just a culmination of work and the casting director seeing you and seeing growth, and then trusting you to be able to come to the set on time, be professional, and execute. And I love working with Tyler Perry because he has a system set up which works. He shoots very fast.
Mm-hmm.
He expects you to come in and be off book, and there's no playing around. You know, you'll get maybe one walkthrough rehearsal just for blocking purposes. And then he's like, okay, let's go. And I love that because that's how I train myself to be like, yeah, you know, I should be able to show up and go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I love. And, you know, coming back the second time for the Have and Have Nots as a recurring guest star, it's awesome. So a lot of good stuff happening with Tyler Perry, but it wasn't an easy fight. I had to pay my dues like everybody else.
There's a lot of eyes on those shows. Those are not small roles.
Right.
Did that change how you were perceived going forward? Did people start to recognize you? Did more casting agents know who you were walking through the door?
Yeah, by that time, I think I really started to the bulk, because I was auditioning on average, especially during peak time, like the pilot season in 2013. That's when I started really catching my wind. I was auditioning probably like 15 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
About three or four of those, I'll be driving back and forth to Atlanta either for callbacks, just so that way they can see me face to face and build a rapport. So, yeah, I think, you know, the resume, they see the resume, they see the growth, and they're like, wow. I mean, he's doing something right. But just showing up and being the person that's on paper, I think really weighed heavily in my favor. Just being professional and wanting to come in, not with the expectation that, oh, I got to get this role. I took something from Bryan Cranston a couple of years ago. I think he was at the Oscars. He said something, and it truly resonated with me. He said, your job as an actor is to give performances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it takes a lot of pressure off of you when you go into an audition and say, look, I don't really care. I would like to get the job, but my job right now is to give a performance, to show up, knowing my material, also being flexible enough for changes, any changes that the director or the producers, whoever's in the room, just present my best work and give them a performance. Don't mm-hmm. audition, give a performance, solid, truthful performance. And at the end of it, say thank you and walk away, because there's so much stuff that you cannot control in that room. But what you can control is your mindset going in. And I think that was a breaking point for me also. And it changed things because I had more fun. I walked in, I was having fun. Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me. And when it was ready for me to do my thing, I took a deep breath and I gave my performance. I gave a performance. So I think that's one of the things that kind of helped me out in my career moving forward, circa 2013.
So before I move on to the next role that I want to talk about, I do want to highlight the fact that I don't think you've ever been stereotyped or pigeonholed into a specific part or role. Just a cursory glance at your IMDb page for anyone who wants to take a look. There's not a whole bunch of I don't see any, you know, gang leader number one or you know,
right.
drug dealer number two. I see paramedics,
right.
FBI agents, SWAT leaders, things like that. Those aren't typical roles for new actors or up and coming actors. Was that a conscious decision on your part, or that's just how it's played out?
That's how it played out. And I think coming from a military background, fresh out the military, my bearing,
mm-hmm.
that bearing is with me when I walk into a room.
Okay.
And they pick up on those things. And it was an easy sell for my agent, because early in the game, it's like, you know, and I would sit down with my agent, Jerry Avery, love her to death. Gotta put a shout out to my agent. We have such a phenomenal relationship because we talk. And I said, okay, this is me. Who am I as an actor, as a performer, as a talent? What am I selling? What is an easy sell for me? When you look at me in terms of casting, what do you see? And it's a hard question that you have to look and be honest with yourself when you look in the mirror, like, who am I? And how do I want to be perceived? We nailed that down. I said, let's play to my strengths. This is who I am. This is where I come from. This is what I can do right now if they cast it tomorrow. And it's under five lines early in my career. So I did a lot of auditions for cops. It's especially recurring. My first real recurring role was as on Officer Smith on Officer Smith on Killing Winston Jones. And in the movie, I played a cop in that. And then on Devious Maids, I played another cop. That I recurred on that show as a cop. So there's a lot of law enforcement stuff that parallel the military, because those things just, they're so identical. Mm-hmm. And they can see me in my demeanor and the way I walk and the way I talk, that it was an easy sell. And then from there, I was like, okay, I've done enough of these. So let's be challenged. Let's do something else. Let's do something else so that way I can get a range. Because if not, we'll probably be stuck in Copland, which is not a bad place because I'll always work. Right. But I do have other skill sets.
Talk to me a little bit about MacGyver. CBS is, I think at this point, the biggest network currently. And MacGyver is one of their flagship shows. And not only have you been on the show, but you're a recurring character. How did that come about?
Right. That came about a year and a half in their first season. In the first season of MacGyver, they wanted to reboot a lot of the characters from the original show. And the Colton family, if you're familiar with them, they're a family of bounty hunters, black bounty hunters. The family comprised of Mama Colton, who was portrayed by the late Della Reese, now portrayed by Miss Cheryl Lee Ralph, who I love, is near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. Also Billy Colton, who was portrayed by Cuba Gooden Jr. And is now portrayed by Lance Gross, and myself, Frank Colton, who was portrayed by the late Clavon Little, who's known for Blazing Saddles and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Right.
And
legend.
Jesse Colton. Right. He's a legend. And Jesse Colton, who was portrayed by Richard Lawson, now Javicia. Mm-hmm. Javicia Leslie, I'm sorry. So, to be a part of something that was part of the original MacGyver canon, and to bring that to life in mainstream, it was well received. The first episode that we did, episode 116, Hook, in the first season. So they brought us back. It's always good to kind of step in the shoes of legends who was there before, that paved the way. So exciting stuff. So it's going to be good when it comes back around.
From there, I don't think Gifted was next. What was next? What was the next big role?
The next big role was after MacGyver.
Was that Have and Have Nots?
Yeah, I think it was the Have and Have Nots.
Okay.
It was the Have and Have. It was like right afterward. that whole quarter, I think it was like the first quarter of the year. I think it was 2016. I was really busy doing a lot of good stuff, and to include some feature films and made for TV films like Killing Reagan. I was fortunate enough to play a role in that, and I don't call it luck, but I will say the harder that I worked, the more determined that I am, the luckier I get. So
the preparation leads to success.
Preparation, exactly. Preparation. Knowing what you're selling. Mm-hmm. Knowing what you're selling. Knowing who you are and standing in your truth. It pays off.
Up until now, you've been playing with, some pretty big heavy hitter names and networks. And you got Oprah and Tyler Perry connected. You got CBS. You started getting that Disney money.
Right. Yes. Marvel and Fox.
Hey, look, man.
It's good. It's good. It's especially now. I'm sorry. I think you was about to have a question.
Oh, no. I'm just saying, if there's a time to be part of that universe, if there's a time to have made your mark, it's now.
Right. Everything I've done previously leading up to this has prepared me for that, because now I am part of the Marvel universe, being on the show Gifted, which is part of the X-Men universe, playing a mutant, an African-American mutant, nonetheless. And what what a better time to talk about it than now in Black History Month.
Yeah.
And the character that I portray, Shatter, he's a very complex dude. You know, he's a very real person. He's when I read the initial script or the auditioning size form, I didn't know I was auditioning for that role. I didn't know it was part of Marvel, but I could just see the complexities within the dialogue. It was some undertones there. And if anybody is interested in looking up Shatter's background on Wikipedia, you'll see that he tried to commit suicide early in his mutation because he didn't want to be a mutant. He didn't want to be a mutant, but it was a failed attempt because my mutation makes me virtually indestructible, invulnerable. I have diamond hard skin. I can regenerate limbs. I mean, I can crystallize things, turn things into crystal based off the water composition in it. He's a very powerful a mutant, but he's a B, C list mutant because nobody really talked about him. Up until like 2002, he was virtually unknown, part of the Morlocks faction in Marvel Comics. But I have a opportunity to champion people who have those thoughts of suicide, who deal with depression or who deal with disfigured appearances. Mm-hmm. I can be a champion for those people because that's who he is. He's kind of like a reluctant hero. And he, even amongst other mutants, he feels apart because of the way he looks. And I know there's a lot of people out in the world who feel that way, whether they feel like they're too tall or too short, too fat, or whatever. Shatter is the guy who bears those same insecurities. So it's an important conversation to have, and I'm glad to do it. I feel very blessed to play that character.
The Marvel Universe, and in particular the X-Men, there's probably, 60 years worth of backstories, and even though it's slightly changed for TV, that's a lot of ground and a lot of heavy lifting that you guys have to at least pay service to or homage to. How much work went into developing the character, one, and how true did you, is there some weight that you feel that you have to stand up for these characters as they were and as they are now written?
Start with the preparation. I did a lot of research on the character going forward. Now, as a kid, I used to collect X-Men comics, or just comics in general. I used to take my lunch money and spend 85% of that on comics. So I've already had like a healthy knowledge of comics.
Okay.
And, you know, being absent from the writing rooms, you know, it's like, you want to kind of be able to add what you know to the conversation. But the gifted writer staff, they're so well-versed and so on top of their game, and they're comic fans. They might as well write comics. So they got a lot of stuff right. So I was never feeling any kind of pressure there about, oh, man, are we being true? Because you can only do what you can do. But then, thank God, we had very competent and skilled writers to handle that. Also, just my own individual preparation, I talked to the guys who created Shatter. Okay. Sean Martin, bro, who he drew Shatter. He was the cartoonist or the illustrator who illustrated and created Shatter. So I talked to him and we became friends and just exchanging that dialogue, saying, okay, based off of what I know and what's been published in the comics is X, Y, and Z. What don't I know? What didn't you have a chance during your run of writing the Morlocks and illustrating Shatter that you can give me? Because I was looking for the nuggets. I was looking at, what was his relationship like with his father? Yeah, what was his relationship post his mutation to his loved ones, girlfriends, friends? Because he got alienated and he was forced to go on the ground. And he would answer certain things outside because this is what I came up with. And because when you don't have that kind of input, you got to create it as an actor. You have to create it. And I went dark, and what I felt like probably would be a reasonable reaction to someone going through a heavy mutation like that, and how he could or she could be ostracized and alienated.
Right.
But thankfully, Sean Martin, bro, he gave me enough insight, and he was like, man, you know, your turn on it is just as good as what we had. So I was like, hey, if you guys revamp that storyline or shatter, because it's quite possible, then take it and run with it. So 60 years of Marvel Comics and what Jack Kirby and Stan Lee has done, what they've created, it's amazing, because people are the diehard fans, they know.
Right.
And thankfully, we're operating in the green zone. We're not in the red.
I'm not going to ask you a lot about the show because I'm about 5 episodes behind and I don't want you to ruin it for me.
Right.
But the show's been well received, and it's in a space where if you did it wrong, they would have let you know.
Right.
And have you seen for yourself, like, have you started going to the comic cons and things like that to see how the crowd is liking the show, or is that down the road for you?
It's down the road, but I was also, like, this past October, mm-hmm. I had an invite to the London MCM Comic Con, but okay. I couldn't go. I was right in production of The Gifted, so it just didn't work out. However, I can imagine that with the way that the whole series ended and some of the things that Shatter did, and I ain't going to spoil it for you, they're going to want to probably include me here shortly. It's probably inevitable within the next few months. So, okay. But I don't obsess about what the fans are saying, because they can be good and bad. And you just don't want to get too wrapped up into what people are saying. But generally, the consensus has been very positive reviews. And I'm very, I won't say vocal, but I talk to fans. I'm not afraid to talk to fans. I'm not afraid to have a conversation with the fans about, you know, the show and, you know, how they receive the character, because I'm a fan of comics. Mm-hmm. So we can both geek out about it, and it's all love, whether it's the DC universe or Marvel. Yeah, I'm looking forward to attending the next big Comic-Con, hopefully in the near future.
I think, let me talk to you about the movies, because I know you're in a new one coming up, Den of Thieves.
Right.
That one looks like it's going to be big. You got some names attached to that one. The story looks phenomenal. How did that come about?
That came about last February. I actually booked the role. I went, I was just wrapping one film for I think Lifetime. I did like a Lifetime film called Love at the Shore. And my agent, she was like, hey, you want to read for this? I was like, okay, fine. You know, read for the initial role that I auditioned for, ended up getting the call back. Couple of months later, went down to Atlanta and had to call back with the director, Christian Gudegast. And he loved me. He loved what I bought in the room. And actually, he told me to leave the room. He gave me another script or size for another character that he felt like I would be perfect for. Gave me like 5-10 minutes. I came back in. I presented that to him. And he was like, man, you're going to be in the movie. So we started talking. He's like, you looked at my resume. He's like, so you was in the military? And I was like, yeah, you know. And he was a huge champion of the armed forces. And so that kind of helped me out, because if you watch the movie, I don't want to spoil it, but the main antagonist and protagonist, 50 Cent, and also his character that he plays, and LeBeau and Merriman, they were Marines.
Okay.
They were Marines before they became guys who did these huge heists. It's very smart guys, because I'll tell you, there used to be a stigma that you had to be dumb to go to the military. No, some of the brightest brains I've ever been around were men and women who wore the uniform. So Mr. Gudegast, Christian, he captured that to the T in terms of how they executed their plans. It was very thought out. So I was proud to be a part of that movie, and even proud to see how it was received. I think it was like in the first week made $13 million at the box office. So it got very good ratings. I'm super proud of that movie and everybody who had a part of it.
I don't want to get off of that, but I forgot you did a movie with Pacino last year, or it came out last year.
Yes.
Man.
Yes. Hey, Pacino. Man. Yeah. Pacino. Look, yeah, man. Like, what do you do? Now go ahead, finish your question, man, because I get super excited.
I don't even know if I have a question. I think I just wanted to say Pacino a couple times.
Pacino, right? I'll be there with you.
Pacino.
Just being in the same room, in the same set, working with this guy, talking to him, because I don't fan out.
Right.
I believe in that 15-second elevator pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Right, not pitching anything to him, but asking the right questions. Like if you're in the elevator with whoever, a head of state or a guy who developed programs, if you're in the elevator with Bill Gates and you're a computer guy, what are your questions? What are you going to ask him?
Right.
So, like any other person that I respect, I ask Mr. Pacino some questions about the craft of acting, just like Godfather. Mm-hmm. What he did with Godfather was amazing. And I remember reading about how he had fear that he was going to get fired every day he came to set because some of the producers, they would look at the dailies and not understand why he wasn't playing all big and this and that because he was the son of a mob king. But he understood the character development, how his character was going to go from unassuming and then have these moments where it has a polar shift. And it grows. So he understood because he read the script. But a lot of people who don't understand character development, they don't understand those nuances. So I would talk to him about that. And, he would give pearls and he would drop pearls of wisdom amongst myself and Carl Urban, another guy I really admire his work, who plays, Bones on Star Trek. He has a huge body of work.
Right.
So we would, in between scenes, we would sit down and we would just talk. I'm a sponge. I take in the stuff that I feel like is very pertinent, and I try to apply it. But it was a blessing to work with Al Pacino. So, Robert De Niro, you next, brother.
Hey, look. I'll be sitting here saying De Niro over and over again.
De Niro, then
Sam Jackson.
Sam Jackson, right, yeah. Denzel Washington, all of them, man. There's so many great, talented people out there that I know in the near future I may have an opportunity to work with them and collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
So I love what I do. It's a blessing every day.
So what's next?
What's next is just keep working, always forward, always forward. Staying in my truth, staying professional, staying reliable. I'm not trying to break it because I understand, that it is a blessing for me to be able to do this because there's a lot of actors out there who went to all of these schools, who went to NYU or Pace University or SoCal, all kinds of prestigious schools to do what I do, and they haven't gotten their break.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand that, I have to come with my A game every day. I have to stay in the trenches. And I have to learn and grow and contribute, make my contribution. So I'm always looking for the next thing, but I can't smell the roses. And, luckily I have an agent that we see eye to eye. We have the greatest relationship, and she's working hard for me. So I got to continue to be worthy of that. So who knows what the future may bring, but I guarantee it's going to be big.
Now, I want to ask a question for the people out there who, like, we've talked about how you turn your creativity into a published work, but there are people out there who have the desire to be actors or entertainers of any genre. And you can't give away the whole book because, no one can distill years of work into a few sentences. But if you wanted to distill the first day of the path into a few sentences, what would that be?
Look deep within yourself. And know who you are, know what you sell, what you're selling. If you were McDonald's, if you look at yourself as if you were a franchise, what is your Big Mac? What is your Big Mac? What is your quarter pounder? What is it that you sell easily? And you play to your strengths and be willing to work. And another thing, don't wear your feelings on your shirt sleeve. Don't get attached to the thought of, oh man, am I going to get this role? No, Don't go in with the mindset of I gotta get the role. Go in the mindset of let me present some work to this person and connect and walk away. And if you get the role, understand how you got it. But don't go in with that mindset, because I think it's poisonous. And don't try to compare yourself to anybody either. So I think that's all day one. That goes in terms of just mindset. Develop the right mindset. Understand what you're doing, why you're doing it, and what you have to contribute. And from there, you got to lace up your boots or your put on your stilettos or whatever it is that you're wearing to go to where you're going to go. And you just got to step with a purpose, because nobody's going to give you anything. You got to take it. You got to earn it.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
In 5 years, hopefully I can see myself probably sitting amongst my peers at the Oscars or the Emmys or the Golden Globes, either being nominated for something or have won something or contributed to something being nominated or award winning. But it's all the work that I'm willing to put in to get there, but you just never know. It's just a blessing to wake up every day and still be in the game. So I'm going to just, you know, give it to God and let him continue to guide me and keep bringing great people around me. And I'm going to make it do what it do. Make it do what it do.
Remind me again where I can find the books, because you got me interested in that too.
Right. You can go to Amazon.com and just kind of type in books by Jermaine Rivers. And then you'll see the Nemesis Chronicles. The first book is Nemesis Blood Trails. That really highlights that initial struggle. The second book is Dark Apprentice.
Okay.
And the third book is Road to Armageddon. So planned 4-book series, but I kind of wrapped it up with 3. That fourth one would have been like just in case. I still wanted some stuff, but I've been so busy working, I hadn't had a chance to kind of sit down and put pen to paper or finger to those keyboards yet. But yeah, you can find them on Amazon.
So look, people, you've had a masterclass on how to become a working actor. The bottom line is, be prepared for your opportunities. He gave you your first day. Look out for him and all the upcoming things. Go see him at Den of Thieves. Check him out on The Gifted. You have to do it. Look, we thank you, man. Really appreciate you taking the time. Feel free to come back at any time. Welcome to the family.
Thank you, Kai.
Man, your work has been very impressive, and please keep going. Don't stop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks, brother.
We want to thank Jermaine for taking time out of his schedule to sit down with us and talk about his journey in the entertainment industry. Definitely check him out on The Gifted on Fox, and check him out on Den of Thieves. Family, we can't do any of this without you. We really appreciate all your support. Leave us a comment. Let us know how we're doing. And definitely, if you think of something that you want to hear, let us know, and we'll do our best to bring it to you. Until next time, love.